Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is part two of the Michael Peterson case, the death of Kathleen Peterson. If you haven't listened to part one, I'd very much encourage you to go back and listen to the first episode where Aaron and I cover the events that happened that night, a lot of the evidence. We don't go all the way through the trial, but we get pretty deep into it. With the evidence, we go over a lot of the blood evidence, the fall down the stairs, as opposed to wound evidence involving a weapon of some sort. We also bring up what could be a staged scene with wine glasses and an unused condom. We also present some of the trial and prosecution's tactics. On part two, we're going to finish out the trial, the sentencing, and get into our theories on what actually happened or how we think this went down.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anytime
you have a case like this, the judge has to determine what is allowed in the court and what isn't. And one of the things they want to bring into the court is another death that happened in connection to Michael Peterson, in that back when he lived in Germany with his first wife, Patricia, she had a friend named Elizabeth Ratliff. And Elizabeth Ratliff died one night after being dropped off at home by Michael Peterson with her two daughters. And sometime that night she died. There is some suggestion that Michael Peterson may have been involved in that death. What happened?
Well, the nanny discovers the body of Elizabeth Ratliff at the bottom of the stairs. So we have two women who have untimely deaths at the bottom of staircases. And both of them have suffered traumatic head injuries. The coincidence of this is pretty gnarly for a jury to look at. Now, when they discover that Elizabeth Ratliff had passed away in Germany, she was actually buried in the States. The prosecution has her body exhumed, shipped back to North Carolina for their forensic pathologist to do an autopsy. The defense says, why don't you just do the autopsy in Texas or wherever she was buried with a non-biased forensic pathologist?
At least where there wouldn't be a question.
Yeah, because we already have the pathologist here in Durham saying this was homicide. So let's get a second opinion, at least on this other woman's body from 17 plus years ago.
Yeah, there was some suggestion that she may have died from a stroke.
A cerebral hemorrhage or something to that effect, yeah.
But then they couldn't find evidence of that.
Well, at the time of her death, they did find evidence of that. But 17 years later, 6 feet under, you don't have as clear of a picture as what you do at a fresh crime scene. And so the same pathologist does an autopsy. And in this autopsy report, she puts death by like homicidal attack.
Homicidal blows.
Yeah. That's really prejudicial. You say death by blunt force trauma. That's very medical. Death by homicidal attack, homicidal blows.
Well, that's painting a picture.
Yeah. You can checkmark the box that says death by homicide, and you can say blunt force trauma. But this whole autopsy report, it's so inflammatory that, one, he was never charged with this crime. It was never even suspected at the time that this was a murder. They were pretty sure, at least the authorities on site, this was an accident.
Yeah, what they had was there was a witness who saw Michael Peterson running from the Ratliff home that night. But aside from that, really, Michael Peterson did a lot of talking to the authorities there and was giving them information. And some say that's more indicative of his guilt because he was steering the investigation.
It's very possible. There was blood up the stairway. There was what I would consider some suspicious things at that crime scene. And Elizabeth had a $250,000 trust that she was going to give to her children. And she allowed Michael Peterson to have control of that trust. So it's speculated that, hey, he had all his money, get rid of her, get her out of the picture. He will end up taking her children on as his own. So it's one of those things where it's like, you can play that, you can spin that either way of why would this guy push this person down the stairs and then take on the children? If he's just greedy for money, that doesn't make a lot of sense because the money's going to the children. So,
well, but he's in charge of the trust. Yeah. And also there were things that Elizabeth Ratliff owned that disappeared. So there's some suggestion that maybe he made off with some of her valuable possessions as well. Now, all I can say is to be fair, you can read into that and you can use it to determine whether you think he's a criminal or not.
Serial killer, yeah.
But when it comes down to a court of law, if he hasn't been charged at all in a case, and he wasn't named a suspect in that case even, then why are they bringing it into this case? Now, I get why the prosecution wants that to happen, But why would the judge allow that? You can't speak for the judge, but I guess I'm just asking a question that it needs to be asked.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we have the rule of law and a court of law for a reason. He essentially is being accused and found guilty of a murder without a trial or jury as evidence for a crime that he's now accused of. It's not exactly fair. I don't know how I feel about the Ratliff situation. I don't know if he murdered her or not, or if that was a terrible accident. But regardless of how I feel about it, I do have a problem with it being used against him in this situation.
If you're upset about the Ratliff situation and how it went down, you'll just have to blame the German authorities because they're the ones who didn't do anything with the information they had.
Well, American authorities were there too.
Right, but no one did anything.
No, they determined it an accident. They did a somewhat interesting investigation. I don't know if it was thorough or not, but they did enough where they felt satisfied.
It looks bad, but I think that's hindsight is 20/20. You know, when you compare the cases of these two women that died who both knew Michael Peterson, it looks bad.
Yeah.
But again, this is highly prejudicial when you bring it into a case like this when they didn't prove it. Again, I agree. It looks bad. And it certainly looks like he could have killed her and gotten a lot of money out of it. But they didn't go that route. So to me, this is something that I don't understand why the judge allowed this into the case unless the judge was a little prejudicial against Michael Peterson.
There's a lot of problems with the things that the prosecution's doing and the way that the trial's going, which just doesn't look good for Michael.
But it doesn't look good for our court system either, right? For justice?
Yeah.
One of the things that can happen is, so you get the win, you get a conviction, but then sometime later, someone can bring up unfair trial.
Yeah.
And this is how they lose cases, is by bringing in stuff that should not be in there. And again, this has nothing to do with whether he actually killed Elizabeth Ratliff or not. This has to do with facts. Facts are he was never charged, arrested, or convicted for the murder of Elizabeth Ratliff. And yet they're presenting information in court that is highly prejudicial and will likely cause jury members to look at him and think, uh-oh, he's done this before.
Yeah, there's a pattern established now. There are so many similarities between these two incidents that it's got to be foul play. It's absolutely homicide. And we even will put it in the autopsy report.
Both of these women died at night. They both died from head wounds. They both had scalp lacerations. I mean, we could go on and on.
Yeah. The similarities are there, absolutely.
But this is, again, prejudicial. People need to understand prejudicial means that this is the kind of thing that can cost you this win in court, is the defense can later argue, this was not a fair trial. How is that fair?
Yeah.
And so when we go over this and we say, what kind of trial was this, where they do have good evidence against him, but then they're needlessly bringing in prejudicial things like having this escort who he never even met describe what kind of sex they were going to have, and then bringing in this case from Germany from many years earlier where a woman died, and they're painting the picture of, oh, he killed her in the same way that Kathleen died.
I feel like they're overextending because of prejudice, because of bigotry, or because they feel like they don't have a solid case, so they have to throw everything at the wall, see what sticks.
I don't know that they don't have a solid case. I wonder if this goes back to Hardin and the columns that were written against him, because how does he not come in as the attorney and look across and see Michael Peterson and think, oh man, I'm going to have a field day with you in court.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is when I say they felt like their case was shaky, I don't think they had a shaky case. I don't think they needed to do all this extra stuff. I think they needed to keep it short, simple, and to the point. And that's when we get to the blowpoke, right? Because their whole entire theory hinges on him beating her over the head with this metal rod, this metal blowpoke. And during the trial, I think it's Todd, his son, goes downstairs into the like garage or the basement and finds the blowpoke.
Yeah, it's just leaning up against the wall or something.
Yeah.
And they say that all these detectives went through the house and couldn't find it. And yet it was right there in plain sight.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
And they make a big deal out of this because they say, oh, well, it was gifted and it was in this room upstairs. And so they go through all this stuff. But then the defense actually produces photographs from events inside the house from, you know, the prior year or so, showing that it's no longer in the spot it was always at. So it was moved at some point, but it was moved well before Kathleen's death.
And it's got cobwebs all over it, dirt and grime all over it. And what it doesn't have is blood on it.
And they test it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to be honest, you could use a weapon and kill somebody.
Yeah.
And then you could drive it into the ground, make it real dirty, clean it off, drive it into the ground, and then put some cobwebbing on it. But pretty much, if you put some blood on something, they will find it.
Yeah, they're going to find the blood. And I will agree that you can clean off a weapon, you can age it, but the cobwebs and everything, it's like that thing been sitting there for a while. It wasn't moved and cleaned off and then laid there and whatever. So their whole theory is based on this as the murder weapon. And it's proven, like, the last day of trial, hey, we found it. Here it is. By the way, it's not the murder weapon. And here's where I have a problem, because I think he did it. I'm just going to say that. But their theory's wrong. And does a prosecutor have to get their theory right? I mean, this is the problem is, okay, you can put him there, you can put her there, you can do this whole rigmarole, but the method of death, well, now we don't have a murder weapon. I thought that was kind of important.
Well, I don't know how important it is. I think it's important for those of us who want to figure this out, but I don't know that it's important when he could have used some other hard weapon. So, I mean, what could it be, right? We talked about this. You and I talked at length about what it could possibly be. Now, I put a lot of stake into something coming from outside the home because there is evidence she came into the home
injured. Yeah, there's blood droplets outside the home. So, therefore, you think she was attacked and then went into the house.
And she may have pushed the door closed. She has some microscopic owl feathers. One was found earlier on, but a couple more were found later on when it was retested.
Pine needles.
There's a wood chip, a wood sliver. I mean, I'm wondering if he attacked her with some kind of a branch. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But this is something that we just don't know how it went down. We can look at the evidence and say she was beaten to death. Okay, well, beaten with what? Hmm. What did you say when we talked about this?
I will say that I don't believe she fell down the stairs at all. I don't have any inkling how that plays out as an accidental fall down the stairs. So I will say that she was attacked at the base of the stairs or in the hallway. She was attacked. I won't even say that she was hit with a branch or a metal bar or anything. And the reason why we have a lot of trouble with this beating is she didn't have any skull fractures. She had lacerations, meaning her skin was torn, but her skull wasn't cracked. Hitting somebody over the head with a metal object leaves bruisings, chips the skull. There's always something that is, any item, utensil, axe, baseball bat, metal object, whatever it be, going to do more than just tear the skin. And that's why we have a hard time with the beating death. But a branch, that might not be heavy enough or hard enough to leave a skull fracture. So I look at this and here's some problems I have is, according to the defense, there's no cast off. So I'm thinking, okay, if there's no cast off patterns, then maybe he didn't beat her with a rod or a blowpoke or something. Also, there's no spatter on his shirt. So did he change shirts or did he not beat her with something that's shooting blood up onto his shirt, but it is shooting onto the wall? And then you have the bloody footprint on the back of her leg. And then you have him taking his shoes off and leaving them beside the body. So my only idea here is that he stomped on her to death. And I really haven't seen that theory out there. And I didn't have it before, you know, 10 years ago when we first watched the documentary, whatever it was. I came up with this just looking at the evidence of the wounds, the blood, the lack of blood on his shirt, but there being spatter on the inside of his shorts.
And we didn't really get into that, but there is blood spatter that went up on the inside of his shorts.
So I'm thinking he's stomping her to death, especially if it's glancing blows with his shoe. It's not going to cause a skull fracture. And his shoes are kind of soft. That's going to cause the spatter in a very enclosed area, and it's going to cause spatter on his shorts, but maybe not all the way up on his shirt.
Yeah, there was blood spatter up inside of his shorts, but it was one droplet.
Just like the droplets found up the wall or on the ceiling, it's one drop. So in the shorts, he did say he embraced her. It's possible that one drop of blood fell off of her head and into his shorts. I have to give him that. It's not exactly spatter. It's one drop. But still, that doesn't explain all of the wounds and blood and gore that was happening there. So,
yeah, in my opinion, it shouldn't have been there in the first place. There were witnesses that saw him working at it, trying to clean it off. So if he's just got his bare feet, and this is the question I had when you were telling me that, I didn't put it together until more recently, but what if he took off his shoes and socks because he didn't want there to be a lot of blood all over his shoes and socks? Well, he can rinse off his legs.
Yeah, yeah. You could play it either way. I just assumed he stomped her with his shoes on and then took them off because he didn't want to drag blood around the house.
Well, eventually there will be a lot more blood after the wounds are being created. And then what if that's why she has a bloody shoe print on her?
Yeah.
Because he was knocking her down.
Yeah.
And then once he saw that, he was like, I better take my shoes and socks off because I'm leaving evidence here that I'm attacking her.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
If I'm going with the murder angle, I think he stomped her to death. And that makes the most sense to me. It makes more sense than a fall down the stairs, and it makes more sense than hitting her over the head with a metal object that should have done different damage.
If it would do that kind of damage, they weren't able to show that the fireplace poker was used because it didn't test positive for any blood or anything like that. There is a tip of the fire poker that's missing, but let's just say that was on there and then discarded. Well, there should still be evidence on the fireplace poker.
Yeah, the rod itself should right.
There
have should blood.
There should be some evidence.
Yeah, I mean, if there's...
Or it should be spotless clean because it's been clean.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much blood all over the place. There's no way the blood's going to stay on the end of the poker. And we may have a little bit of a disagreement, but I don't look at that metal poker and see the wounds on her head and think that could cause that because of the little hook that it has. To me, the metal is very smooth. It's not going to tear the skin. It can tear the skin if you just hit somebody with it, you know, just the impact. But then again, we would expect skull fracturing at that point. We'll find out later that police officers actually did find the blowpoke and either picked it up and set it down or just left it where it was. But they actually made reference to it in their police report the night of. So they knew the blowpoke was there. They knew it existed. They knew it wasn't a weapon because it wasn't taken into evidence. Yet they never told the prosecution about this. One hand is not talking to the other. Yet they go with this whole murder theory using the blowpoke, which is just absolutely crazy to me that that got as far as it did. At this point, you know, they don't have a murder weapon. They might as well have said he used a Freddy Krueger glove to attack her with and then discarded it because they don't have any substance here. The defense has shown that there's possible contamination of the crime scene because it wasn't secured. There's blood droplets around, even outside the house. Really have a problem with the way the prosecution has painted the picture with Brad, the male escort. There's just so many issues with their underhandedness that they lost me. There's a lot of unlikable characters in this film, but it sucks when the people that you want to nail a murderer to the wall are some of the most unlikable. I think James Harden is now a judge. That kind of bothers me if he has those kind of opinions about the gay community. And he's going to use that as leverage to find somebody guilty on. It doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy how he's ruling in his court today, especially if it comes to a hate crime against against that community.
Michael Peterson's first degree murder trial concludes in 2003. What's the verdict?
He's found guilty. Much to the surprise of the defense and his family and his children, who very much support him, and he's sentenced.
Most of his children support him. His two sons, Clayton and Todd, Elizabeth Ratliff's children, Margaret and Martha Ratliff, both supported him. But Caitlin Atwater, who was his wife Kathleen's daughter, she didn't support him by the time of the trial, I don't think.
No.
I think she supported him initially, but then she ended up switching sides, as it were.
Once it came out that he was bisexual, had this secret life, she felt like she didn't know him. She felt like she couldn't trust anything out of his mouth.
And the autopsy.
Yeah, yeah.
True. And I think that's true of a number of people who initially supported him. We just said he was found guilty, but really when it came to the family members, the people that were related by marriage or by blood to him, the people who ended up switching sides did so after they learned about the evidence. Not just the bisexuality, but it had a lot to do with the actual evidence that was against him.
Yeah, the crime scene and all of the blood evidence and just the bloody footprint, objects around the house.
Yeah, it was too suspicious for them. But there are some people that said that you support your family member no matter what. This would be people who are related to Michael Peterson. And Michael Peterson's sister, who was one of those who switched sides, who ended up believing that her brother did murder his wife, she said that she had family members who told her, no, around here, we support our family members no matter what. Mm-hmm. We stick by each other. To get his defense, you know, he needed money. And the defense constantly said that he had lots of money. But we can actually prove that they're wrong, because when it came time to pay for his defense, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the only way to pay for it was they had to scrape money from everyone they could. And one of the people they had to get money from was Michael's dad, who was not doing well. In fact, I think he had dementia. Like, he couldn't make his own decisions. Like, his estate was being handled by his children, basically. So he couldn't make that kind of decision. So Michael was having to call his sister and his brother and say, hey, I need this money from Dad. Can you get it?
He actually did get a partial payout from Kathleen's life insurance policy, and that went to his defense also.
Right. But so people were having to try and pull together money for him. The lawyers he got were not cheap.
No, not at all.
One thing I found interesting, though, was his sister said that, and many people have said this, but there were times where they just felt like Michael and Kathleen were just a perfect couple. And one thing that his sister said was that Michael would get an attitude and he would say something kind of mean to Kathleen, and she'd look at him and she'd say, oh, you just shut up, you know? So she'd just give it right back to him, and they would just bust up laughing. So she was, I guess you could say, a good counterpart. She stood strong against him no matter what happened. And yet they were both easygoing, really. And they said that they didn't fight for long stretches of time. If they got into it, it was short-lived.
Yeah, I think the prosecution's attempts to show that they had a bad marriage are the only evidence is he was seeking companionship outside of the marriage. But as far as their actual relationship, seems pretty good.
Yeah, I do believe that the financial stuff was a burden. I think that was a strain on them. But as a couple, if you take money out of the equation and leave everything else, I think they got along great. From all accounts, this is from everyone. Everyone was saying that. Even Caitlin early on was saying they're a great couple. So this character assassination that went on during the trial, which is all I can say it was, this kind of comes back to haunt them, because we talked about how, you know, if you let stuff into a trial, that's a judge's discretion, but it might come back to bite you later when people say that was an unfair trial.
Boy, howdy, does it. I have to say that I remember watching the Aphrodite Jones special on this. And I remember the only thing I remember were her exact words were, I couldn't believe I was sitting there across from Michael. He was telling me that he did not murder his wife, but I had the blood evidence there in front of me. And I knew the truth. I could see the evil in his eyes. And again, I just told you that I think this guy probably stomped her to death. But when it comes to the blood evidence that Mr. Duane had come up with, that didn't go over so well, did it?
Well, in 2011, the whole country learned that Duane Deaver was not who he said he was. He said he was a blood spatter analyst and had worked all these cases.
Like hundreds of cases.
But it turns out this was his third case.
It was something ridiculous.
And they couldn't find where he was actually mentored by the guy that he claimed he was mentored by. They found that the only background that he had in blood spatter analysis training was he attended a seminar, and they couldn't even prove that he was there the whole time. He may have shown up, gotten a snack, and left.
So I think back to Michael Peterson lying about medals he didn't win in the military. But for this guy, Dwayne, to literally be on the stand giving testimony of why this guy is a murderer, why the blood spatter shows an attack. And he was even brought on multiple TV shows, Forensic Files and whatnot, as a blood expert. And this guy was lying through his teeth, and most of his analysis has been debunked.
Well, I what we can say is that he's lied, and that he lied about everything. He lied about some of the cases he handled. He lied about what his background was. And so when that happens, now you can't trust anything he's done. Everything he's ever touched is tainted, and they had to go back and roll back these convictions of these cases that he was a part of. So that is damaging.
Yeah.
And again, this doesn't negate some of the really damning evidence against Michael Peterson, but what it shows is he didn't have a fair trial. And that didn't even include letting in the stuff from Germany and questions about where they went with this bisexual lifestyle.
Yeah. And then the leaking of information before the trial even starts, all this stuff that was just overextending over the top. All they had to do was just literally say, Dwayne isn't who he says he is. And his entire analysis is now in question. And the same judge that presided over the case 10 plus years ago grants him a retrial. And Michael Peterson gets to walk out of prison
pending the retrial.
Yeah.
And we watched the news for I don't know how long. I mean, because we covered this back in 2012 and we didn't hear anything for a long time. And then all of a sudden, you fast forward like 5 years, there's a retrial that's supposedly going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. Why? Because Michael Peterson doesn't want to go to trial.
If you see the state he's in, almost a decade in prison, he can barely walk up the stairs. He's in rough shape. He's not going to make it. Let's just put it that way. And he's already gone through the system. He's already seen a prosecution and a state pull some really shady stuff against him. He doesn't have any faith in the system now. Again, if you think he's innocent, that's great. He absolutely doesn't have any faith in the system. If you think he did it, well, he still doesn't have faith in the system because all the blood evidence used against him was in question.
Again, 2010, 2011, Dwayne Devers' lies come to light. Part of the fallout is, well, this whole Peterson trial is now, it's all in question, right? So a motion is filed by Peterson's lawyer, David Rudolph, in 2010. This is in August. By 2011, this is December 16th, 2011, Michael Peterson walks. He's on $300,000 bail. He is under house arrest, but he's not in prison anymore.
And he's wearing an ankle bracelet and he's on house arrest, yeah.
So they're waiting to see what they're going to do here. Are they going to have a new trial like we were talking about? November 14th, 2016, Michael Peterson requests that the second trial be dismissed. He doesn't want a new trial, but a new trial is scheduled for May 8th, 2017.
Prosecution and the judge are like, no, we're going to go ahead with this.
Obviously, Michael Peterson's lawyer has reached out on February 7th. The news reports that there's some sort of resolution that was negotiated by Rudolph and the district attorney. And they find out later that month on the 24th, that Peterson is entering an Alford plea.
Yeah, he's okay with not going further and putting in a plea of guilt under duress.
Yeah, and this is heavily covered on other cases like the West Memphis 3, but the Alford plea is sort of trying to satisfy everyone. It says, well, if you were in prison, we'll give you time served, and many times you can get out right then and there. And then for the other side who believes that he's guilty, they know that he has now admitted guilt under duress, but he still
Yeah.
He's still putting in a guilty plea, and the judge will say, are you aware that when you say this, you're entering a plea of guilty? And he has to say yes. You know, and Kathleen's sisters are there. Yeah. And, you know, for them, this is the man that killed their sister, and they get to speak to Michael Peterson because this is the culmination of everything. They sorted through all of the issues. This is the end of the Michael Peterson case, as it were, because he's now pleading guilty, Alford plea.
I feel their passions. I feel their hatred for this man. I guess I always just think you would want to just really hammer it home, like how guilty they are, how much they destroyed your life. They just kind of lash out at him and talk about how he treated them during the trial, the first trial. And I'm like, man, there's so many other things you could have said here, but.
Well, they do point out that, you know, like one of her sisters says, Kathleen gave you the best years of her life. She was the mother of your children. I mean, I do get why they're upset with him. This is a guy that is very, very, I would say, he has a lot of animosity towards anyone who thinks he's guilty. Mm-hmm. And it's very plain if you watch the Staircase documentary series that he talks a lot of crap on these people, which is bad because he's supposedly an innocent man fighting for his freedom, and yet he's kind of a nasty person.
Well, he's jaded.
Jaded could be, or he could just be a mean guy. To me, the darkness is shining through.
Yeah.
That's that to me.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not taking a high road anywhere. Mm-mm. Again, some people would say, well, he went to prison for that long a time. But I would say there's a shoe print on the back of Kathleen. She has damaged neck cartilage. She has bruises to her face and her arms from a fall going backward. So this is a guy with some trouble.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
In this re-release of the documentary, they add additional episodes towards the end about this retrial and about some of the evidence, especially the blowpoke being found by the police and not telling the prosecution about it or bringing it up during the trial. Like, so many issues there. But they even ask the judge his opinion. And he essentially says, I don't think they had beyond a reasonable doubt in the first trial. He actually says that he thinks the jury got it wrong. Now, if a jury does say guilty, a judge can overrule that. A judge can come in and say no. Now, if a jury says not guilty, a judge, they can't do anything. But there's so many checks and balances here in favor of the accused. And that kind of bothered me a little bit because I thought if the judge actually did think that they hadn't proved the case and there was not evidence beyond a reasonable doubt, he should have came in and said, no, this is a bad verdict. That's a check and balance of the court system. And the judge even says he had questions, he had problems with the original trial.
Yeah, it's funny because I see it as, I think they proved that he's the murderer, but I have problems with the way they handled the trial. I have a problem with the way they allowed that evidence from Germany in. And I seriously think he's a very good suspect in the death of Elizabeth Ratliff, but I don't see how they let that into the court. That's highly prejudicial. And so in the end, I feel like maybe things sort of worked out. I mean, he had some time in prison and then he still had to enter a guilty plea, but he walked. That's just, you know, and the way I look at it is they screwed up a lot of things here. They sort of made their own bed here.
I think we need to have a higher expectation for our prosecutors. And I have seen great prosecutors. I experienced a great prosecutor in my jury duty. And there were things that were like, oh, that's too prejudicial. And the prosecution was even like, yeah, we can't go there. And they checked themselves. And I'm thinking, wait, there was some conversation between two guys that doesn't even really relate to this murder, and you're not going to allow it in because it might be prejudicial, yet they're going to bring in Brad and then talk him about their intimate sex life and what he offers people. That's somehow admissible? Really? Come on. And this is my problem with this case, and almost out of spite, I'm glad he walked because of the underhandedness of the state.
And I wonder if that DA just couldn't help himself because he was prosecuting a man who clearly didn't like him. And so this is his way of, you know, really putting him through the ringer.
And if they would have used another prosecutor, change of venue, whatever, probably wouldn't have these problems. And I still think they could have gotten a conviction with the evidence alone. As long as they didn't use Dwayne. But yeah, there's a problem there. And it came back and bit him in the face. So I don't really have much of an emotional reaction to this man walking around again, because I sort of think you created this. This is your problem. If you would have done it the right way the first time, we wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah, I believe he murdered his wife, but what did they do wrong? Well, law enforcement didn't lock down the scene properly. I mean, if you look at the timeline, it takes them, what, almost an hour, it seems like, or something like that, yeah, for them to start locking the scene down. Then they bring in highly prejudicial information that doesn't, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, stick to the facts. Show what happened here.
The fact that they don't lock down the crime scene brings into question, why are these blood droplets found around the house? Is this a cleanup or is this just cross-contamination? You also had those two photographs that the defense loves to show of the two major droplets in the staircase that are not major in the second photo. And they're like, well, why did that happen? Who wiped this down? And why are you wiping down a crime scene? So it brings a lot of things into question. And then you have Dwayne, who I don't even know where they found that guy, but there you have it. I just don't know how to put this without bashing prosecutors, because there are good prosecutors out there that I think could have tried this case clean, free and clear, and got a conviction without doing all they did. And the fact that the state didn't see a conflict of interest, see all these issues, really sucks.
The first time we covered this case, we spent a little bit of time on a creature known as the barred owl.
Yes, and we can't talk about this without talking about the owl theory. And in fact, we even joked that we'd call this episode "The Owl Did It" or "Who Did It."
Yeah, the owl theory is compelling because they did find microscopic owl feathers. There was evidence of outside materials coming in, like pine needles, a wood chip.
And she had clumps of her own hair in both of her hands.
Right. And generally, people can end up pulling their hair out when they're under immense stress, like murder stress is what I would call it, because they've gone through something very, very traumatic, like an attack.
Yeah. So if you were to ask me what percentage I would give to murder, what percentage I would give to a fall down the stairs, and what percentage I would give to an owl attack, I would literally give like 75-85% to murder, 0% to a fall down the stairs, and then the remainder to an owl. Because the owl attack makes more sense. The wounds that she has, just the flesh being ripped and no skull fractures, her having clumps of hair in her own hands as if she's fighting off an owl that's on her head. And then you look at the lacerations and you look at the owl talons, kind of matches up. And then you go read about owl attacks that happen all across Europe and America. They're vicious animals. And I can't totally 100% disregard the owl theory. My problem is really the timeline of the events of the night. If she was attacked by an owl, one, how does he not know about this? Two, not enough time passed between his smoke and drink outside and then finding her body. So it kind of throws the owl theory into question because of the timeline. But I absolutely would buy that somebody could be attacked by an owl and bleed to death. That doesn't seem totally crazy to me anymore. Just looking at the autopsy and looking at owl attacks that have happened. And if you Google owl attack in images, look at the human attacks, look at dog attacks. It's vicious.
Yeah, if it weren't for the bruising and the damage to her cartilage, I don't know. I could maybe see it. But again, it's to me, they look like defensive wounds. Like, and she was trying to protect herself, yeah, from a beating.
Yeah. And so, and the bruising absolutely does not go along with an owl attack. But on her arms, it does appear to be puncture wounds. Appear. I'm not saying they are.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm not trying to make the argument for the owl. You just have to talk about this because it's a major factor of this case. And as soon as somebody hears owl, come on, you know, GTFO.
Well, I think your point when we talked before, though, was it's not even really about the owl. It's about how this case, this death of Kathleen Peterson, it's not a fall down the stairs.
No.
So you'd much rather spend 10 minutes talking about an owl than this woman falling down the stairs, because that seems ludicrous.
As I said, I believe she was attacked at the base of the stairs, either by Michael or by an owl. I mean, she's attacked there. That's the problem, is her wounds do not match an accident. They match, or they more closely resemble, some sort of an attack. And that's why I can't completely disregard the owl attack. I can't just throw it out the window as if it's totally unfounded. If you think that the timeline is so ambiguous that you could fit in her, you know, the dried blood and the neurons in her brain and the lack of oxygen, all these things, and droplets of blood because the owl flew away and maybe dropped blood either as it was leaving the house or attacked her on the way in, I can make that fit better than the fall down the stairs and getting up and spitting blood out and falling down again. Like, that actually works more in my head. And you have to look into the owl theory and go down that little rabbit hole, the owl hole, I guess, to see it. But again, it doesn't fit perfectly, but it sure as hell fits better than a fall down the stairs.
Well, in my opinion, this case will be discussed for many years to come, because no matter where you fall, whether it's guilty, not guilty, or maybe you're just not sure, nothing fully adds up here.
No. And it's because of the investigation and the trial.
Yeah, that's part of it. But there are certain mysteries with this case that I don't think we can ever solve unless there was an admission somewhere.
Yeah.
Because we don't really know what the murder weapon was, whether it was a foot or a branch or even a poker. However you look at it, we don't know what the murder weapon was, or even if there was a murder weapon. But yeah, as you go through this case, and what was the motive? And we can say that the finances were a mess. Okay. It would be a good motivator to say, if she dies, my kids will now be above the water. I'll be above the water. I'll keep my home. And I'll keep my lifestyle, at least for a long while. But this very much, to me, and I could be wrong, but it looked like something that developed all of a sudden. And I think that's why the prosecution went with the theory of Kathleen finding these emails, these messages, because it sure seemed like something suddenly developed. all of a sudden. And this was a violent reaction.
I don't think he was planning on murdering her for any stretch of time. I think it was, I'm sort of surprised that it was a first degree murder, because I'm thinking it looks more like a crime of passion or in the moment, which would be second degree, according to the definition of those laws. I'm surprised they got first degree murder, because I'm thinking, how did you get a premeditation? How did you get a deliberation here?
And then that's where I can see different motivations here, but I don't know how they all work together. And maybe they all just were together. Maybe that was it. It was just the time had come for him.
And I think of other cases such as Casey Anthony or Lauren Agee, where people aren't even, like, some people aren't even charged, and or they're found not guilty. And I feel like those cases have way more suspicious items and evidence than even the Michael Peterson case. I think those should have been open and shut, whereas this one does have some questions. Also, when you go out on your own and find information about this case, you're going to find, you know, people are very passionate on either side, whether it be guilt or innocent. As much as I think he probably did it, I'm okay with the way the court system played out. But you'll find some websites out there that it's weird, the blood analysis or the analysis of the 911 call and how much they paint a picture of guilty of Michael Peterson. One side's talking about the 911 call, and the 911 operator says, how many stairs did she fall down? And Michael says, what? You know, like, he's caught off guard. And this website's like, oh, he's stalling for time when he says what. They go on to say that he's pleading with the 911 dispatcher, saying, please, please send help, please. And the analysis will say, well, by him saying please, he's manipulating them into saying, I'm the good guy, I'm on your side. Every single thing that Michael Peterson says on the 911 call, according to a couple sites, is twisted into a complete and utter planned, decisive call that was meant to manipulate the dispatcher. And like I said, we've covered like Pamela Hupp, the husband in that, calls 911 and says, my wife killed herself with a knife sticking out the side of her neck. And people look at that and they're like, you killed her. But as we find out later, Pamela Hupp killed the person. And he just totally got the information wrong and said it wrong. And that's where I'm like, yeah, I don't really put a lot of stock in 911 calls anymore. The fact that he says that she's still breathing in the first call and then calls back, you know, they were like, well, now he's got to say that she's not breathing because he's got to establish that she's dead. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking the situation just got worse. He's calling back. He's trying to emphasize, hey, you need to get here sooner. Why would he call back if he wants his wife dead? That's my problem. So I don't believe he's this total mastermind who's anticipating how he's going to sound, everything he's going to say. I think the 911 call is actually in his favor than plays against him. But again, you're going to find a lot of very biased information out there about this case. All the blood evidence is against him. The 911 calls against him. And I'm thinking the blood evidence that you're referencing is from Dwayne, who got most of it wrong, probably. You just have to use your own guide to establish what you think the blood says to you. What are your final thoughts, Aaron?
Like you, I believe Michael Peterson is guilty of this crime. And it's really the amount of evidence that stacks up against him. The first thing, the debt. People tried to argue that Michael Peterson was wealthy. Well, if that's the case, then how come his boys, they love so much, they were in debt as well. And he was having to write emails to his ex-wife, Patricia, and asking her to mortgage the house and get $30,000 to help the kids out. He hadn't gotten any money in like 3 years. He was freeloading off of his wife, Kathleen. She was the breadwinner. She had that job at Nortel making pretty good money. she was facing a layoff situation. They called it optimization at Nortel, but the possibility was there that she could lose her job. And there was no guarantee of it, but if you're carrying $142,000 or $143,000 in credit card debt, the only breadwinner of the house is about to lose their job possibly. That's a lot of stress. Add in that this perfect marriage was continuing on despite Kathleen knowing or not knowing whether he was seeking male companionship.
Why did she leave her last marriage?
Her marriage to her first husband ended after she found out about his infidelity. And so Michael Peterson is arguing that she was okay with it, that she was aware of it, but that's not really true. And even his lawyer, David Rudolph, had to admit in court that Kathleen would have been pretty angered if she had found out that he was setting up a date with an escort, a male escort. So that stuff doesn't really work either. The blood being found as high as 70 to 90 inches. The amount of wounds she sustained to her scalp, it was 7 lacerations.
Yeah, you don't get that falling down a stairwell.
Right. And Dr. Radish had talked about this in court. There was a study, 287 cases, and she took all of the cases involving women about Kathleen's age. And there were, 30 to 40 cases. The most that anyone sustained as far as lacerations goes, falling downstairs, was one laceration. And you also have the luminol evidence showing that there were bare feet moving from where Kathleen was into the kitchen and to the cupboard. Why would he go to the sink? Why would he go to the cupboard? You can't blame this on the neighbors because Michael Peterson is the one who took his shoes and socks off and left them by his wife's body. Lastly, Kathleen's sisters and Michael's sister all felt as though this was murder. And the reason is because when you do look at Kathleen, when you look at what happened to her, there's nothing to say except murder. She had defensive wounds. She had a damaged cartilage. She had all those lacerations to her scalp. You have the defense arguing that she fell backwards as she slipped in her own blood. That doesn't make any sense because she has wounds all over her. She has bruising to her hands, her arms, and her face.
What do you think of the owl?
Everyone keeps bringing up the owl, and we did on our original episode, because if you just look at, I think it's the back right of her scalp, of Kathleen's scalp, it looks like the talons of an owl attacked her.
Like 3 claw marks coming down into one.
They call it trilobe, and it does really look like that. But when you factor in all of the other evidence, it just doesn't make it, it just, like you said, Justin, it's like, the owl is better than the fall down the stairs as a theory, so we can't 100% discount it. But in my opinion, it's 99% Michael Peterson killed his wife. So the owl, it makes for an interesting dialogue about how we're vulnerable. It just doesn't really hold water. It's just interesting. But I think it's time to stop blaming the owl.
Well, we have so many other cases where the theory that a third party did this, an intruder did this, and I'm surprised that they went with a fall down the stairs as opposed to somebody else murdered Kathleen and ran out the front door, which we've seen it on numerous other cases, but instead they went with the accident. And I think that's where the defense just didn't know what to do. And I don't think anyone would buy that accident theory.
Yeah, it's true. If he had tried to argue that an intruder came in and did this, it would be better than saying it was a fall down the stairs. For some, this is a tell. This is going back to when his former neighbor died in Germany, Elizabeth Ratliff. He said that was a fall down the stairs. Mm-hmm. I think it's, well, it worked then. It'll work again now. And that's what some people are saying. And for those that came away from the documentary series thinking that Michael Peterson could be innocent or that he was railroaded somehow, they got the wrong guy. Just remember, you were watching a documentary and it's really questionable on how biased they were.
And again, I still give a pass to a lot of these documentaries because they're telling a story. And for the sake of the story, they're not going to do a deep dive into things that aren't going to play well, you know?
Right, right. So if their aim is to get you thinking, oh, what actually happened here that the state got the wrong guy, well, or the wrong creature, then there you have it. Yeah. You could give them a pass, but I really think instead of holding these documentaries responsible, because they are telling a story, it was their choice to tell the story the way they did. Well, if you are on the fence or you believe you know what happened, I still think it's helpful to go through Michael's emails, to go through all of the evidence that is out there. And you can get the evidence from different websites. There are websites popping up because The Staircase could be a biased documentary. After all, this thing was being put together soon after Kathleen's death. And then, as we found out recently, the editor on the series had an affair for, what, almost a decade with Michael Peterson.
They were together. I won't say an affair, but they were in a relationship.
Yeah, I guess it's not an affair if he's not married anymore. But
so he's very close with them. The documentary film team was pretty much living with him, and he had opened his doors to them. When I first saw the documentary way back in the day, you know, they say that the prosecution and the state didn't open up to them, didn't want to be filmed, didn't want a comment. So I gave them a pass on, well, you're just getting one side of the story because the other side isn't really talking to them. But there are a lot of things that they do gloss over. There are a lot of things that they don't show you, but there's a lot of evidence against them. So, you know, there's that.
Having all the answers and saying this person did commit the crime, that usually doesn't sell as well as, oh no, they were railroaded. I could see where they take a little bit of a license and they hype up certain things and ignore others. Again, if you're an armchair detective, you're already headed somewhere to look up the evidence for yourself and see what they left out. This happened with the Stephen Avery case as well, where the documentary series, which was, I think, expertly made, but still left certain things out. You can go out, check those things out, see whether they matter to you or not.
And if you totally disagree with us on Michael Peterson and The Staircase, it's cool. I'm okay with that. What we say isn't gospel. You know, it's a case that has now reared its ugly head again in the media with Netflix and all that. And it was the second episode that we started with.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.